From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on November 21st at the University of Rochester. Nearly 100 students marched from the Frederick Douglass Leadership House to College President Joel Seligman's office. They were there to drop off a list of demands, and they were chanting, "If we don't get it, shut it down." The students wanted a new comprehensive racial awareness and inclusion plan. They wanted a more diverse faculty. They wanted the social media app called Yik Yak to be blocked on campus servers, citing Yik Yak as the source for nasty, threatening, and anonymous racist comments. The university administration promised to work with them. They promised to listen, to be open to ways to improve. Earlier this month, some of the students who organized that November demonstration told us that they're frustrated, that they didn't feel the administration was following through. Now, we asked if they would come back on the show with administrative leaders to discuss it. And so here we are. Let me welcome my guests first, the guests in studio with us from the University of Rochester. Paul Burgett is the university's vice president and senior advisor to the president. Paul, welcome back. Nice to have you.
Thank you very much, Evan.
Richard Feldman is Dean of the University of Rochester's College of Arts, Sciences, and Engineering. And Dean Feldman, nice to have you back. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me, Evan.
On the phone with us is Delvin Moody, member of the University of Rochester's Black Students Union and Douglass Leadership House. And Delvin, nice to have you back as well. Thank you for taking the time.
Good to be on.
Delvin, our conversation a few weeks ago is what sparked my interest here. And at the time, I told you that I was surprised to hear some of the negative remarks from you, only because, you know, it had been, I think at the time, just about 3 months or less since the demands were first brought out. And I had asked you at the time, is this too soon? Is this a process going to take time? And you said you didn't think so. So tell me, how are you feeling about how things are going at the university?
Yeah, you know, the sentiment of students is that many times they may not know what is going on. And the report that was released showed that a few of the demands were met, but many of the students feel that that is not good enough. They wanted to have the majority of the demands met. And so now what is really happening is going through the report by the Presidential Commission and seeing where it is that the administration has responded, where it is that they did not respond, we feel adequately, and then looking to have that discussion, not in the abstract as about racism, but more so about solutions and about coming to the goal that students have demanded earlier in the year.
So can you be more specific, Delvin? Where are the specific ways you think that the university has fallen short so far?
Yeah, the major thing is in expanding the Office of Minority Students, and then also being able to establish the Frederick Douglass Institute as a department, which is the Department for African and African American Studies. Those were two things specifically, amongst others, that students thought that were not met was not really given the time and the attention that they deserve. The other things that were met was making Douglass Leadership House permanent. Some students feel, my peers feel, that it's really not permanent, but I believe that it's permanent. And then giving a diversity fund, I believe, of $30,000. Those things are good. But in regards to the Office of Minority Students, which is the premier office that deals with black and brown students, and then making sure that the Department of African and African American Studies is more stable and solid on the university campus.
Okay, well, let me ask our guests in studio to respond to some of what they heard. Paul and Richard, where do you want to start? Go ahead, Paul.
Let me turn that over to Richard. As the dean of the college, I think he has comments about that.
Okay.
I'll start with the African-American Studies program. The faculty involved in that program have been working over the semester on stabilizing the offerings for the major. The problem we'd had is that's an interdisciplinary major relying on courses from a variety of different programs and departments in the college. And over time, things had changed in the various departments, and the offerings, the courses required for the major were not being offered on a regular basis as they should be, and the major needed to be updated. They are working on that. There was a recent request for additional data about enrollments and course offerings, and we're hoping that within a short period of time, I don't have an exact deadline, but I'm hoping either in the next couple of weeks or into the beginning of the fall semester, we will have a revised major that will better serve the students and will be better aligned with the offerings that we now have. It turns out there actually are additional courses that could be part of the major that hadn't been previously listed. So I feel very confident that that major will be in much better shape relatively soon. With respect to the Office of Minority Student Affairs, there's two, I think, different issues there that are under consideration. One is funding for the office for activities, programs, advisors, and the like in that program. Norm Burnett is the director of the office. He is in the process of developing his budget for the coming year, as are people in all the other college offices. And after I've received all those budget requests, I will make decisions about what we're able to fund and what we're able to expand. And I do expect that there will be some added resources going toward that office. The other aspect of the Office of Minority Student Affairs under discussion is actually physical space and additional space, especially, I think, student meeting space, a part of their office. And we're looking into that. It's very challenging. There just isn't a lot of available space on campus, especially in the where they're located, Dewey Hall. I did have a meeting this morning that talked about a possible plan, but it involves relocating a number of other offices, and we just have to work through those options to see if they're workable. This is a challenge. We're trying to do it. The last thing I'll say about that is, in the fall, the renovated Frederick Douglass building will open. It's the home of the Paul Burgett Intercultural Center, and that has some space that I think will serve the students. It's not exactly what they're looking for in OMSA, but it will serve some of the same purposes. So there is some additional space about to become available.
Is Douglass Leadership House permanent?
It is. I hesitate about that because I can never say of any student organization that it's absolutely permanent. For example, they're in a building that's part of the residential life system, as a number of other student organizations. Any such organization can maintain its space only if it has enough participants in order to fill or approximately fill the space available. So there are conditions like that that make them not, it's not an absolutely unconditional permanence. But the Douglass Leadership House has been very successful since they've been around. I have every confidence that they will maintain their occupants and will keep their space. So they're as permanent as we can plausibly make them be.
All right, Delvin, what do you think about what you just heard?
I think what was said is adequate to the demands that we listed. Amongst the campus now, you see a real transition from the list of demands going to a list of goals. And in any demand or any set list of things that you submit to administrations, one thing that we had to realize was that we may not come away with this with 100%. Now, the flip side of that is that many students feel that in order to be really equal on this campus and to really be safe or have adequate resources, that they have to have 100% of the demands met. But I think the list now is really turning into a list of goals, and so we're really pushing to make sure that student voice is on every process in that to make sure that every demand or every goal that we set forth in the beginning of the year is met and met adequately to the students. But in regards to what Dean Feldman said, I do think that it is a good step. I do think that it is a good basis by which we can build on as students and then administrators, working with administrators rather, in order to achieve what we set forth in the beginning of the year.
Delvin, I know you're limited on time, but after we let you go in this hour, we're going to hear from your classmates Kirill English and Amber Hudson, who had a chance to tell us about their thoughts. So we'll hear their thoughts coming up. What I recall in talking to them and in talking to you several weeks ago was also a concern just about the representation of diversity on the student body and in the faculty. What do you think needs to happen, Delvin, going forward to make it so that you and your fellow African-American students can feel more comfortable with that?
Yes, and really that was the goal of our summit that we just had in early March. We left that summit bringing together a little over 150 students and 300 at our max event. We left that summit with three goals, focusing on higher education. The first thing was to empower high school students. We felt that there was a disconnect between the high school level and the college level. And in order to have a good pool, a qualified pool of students to be admitted into the University of Rochester and other higher top-tier higher education institutions, then we have to make sure that high school students are empowered to be at least a viable candidate for admission into the schools. The second thing is making sure that black and brown minority students have adequate resources on college campuses. And the third thing is having safe spaces by which black and brown students can utilize on their campus, such as the Douglas Leadership House and others. So one of the first things and the goals that I've said, or our points of impact, is that we have to find a way to truly empower high school students. I think that's the only way to diversify our campus. Yes, we can be a part of the process of maybe admissions. Yes, we can demand that more black and brown students are admitted into the University of Rochester. But we have to also make sure that we are able to reach back to our own black and brown students in the high school level, even maybe starting in the elementary schools, to make sure that they are taking SATs, to make sure that they are able to read at an adequate level. And so I think it's like the old African saying, it takes a village to raise a child. And so I think that's the first step in figuring out what programs can we really use to make sure that we do have an adequate pool of black and brown students able to be admitted to the University of Rochester.
All right, Paul, is that kind of effort, is it fair to say that the university is interested in that kind of effort and that it is ongoing or will increase?
I think it is. It is decidedly a priority of the University of Rochester, and I'll point to a couple of things. I point, first of all, to the university's initiative with East High School. The university, for those of your listeners who don't know, the University of Rochester took over the superintendency of East High School, which the New York State Department of Education was on the cusp of closing and putting into receivership, if you will. The school district came to us and asked the university if it would be willing to be an EOP, Educational Opportunity Partner, which meant that we would have to be involved in running that school. And it took us a year, actually, to prepare a program plan for doing so. Universities typically don't operate pre-collegiate institutions. So we had a faculty member in Steve Eubing in the Warner Graduate School of Education who took a leadership role in driving the creation of a program and identified Sean Nelms, who is currently the superintendent of schools. He's also a part-time faculty member of the Warner School and a graduate of the Warner School. And we created a program that we think has high hopes for success. So the University of Rochester is the superintendent and sole controller of this public school. It's not a charter school. It's a public school. It is funded through RCSD, and the university has hired all of the faculty, in fact, hired all of the staff, has implemented its program, has lengthened the school day, and we started that program in September. The idea is to, number one, improve what is a totally unacceptable graduation rate in the city school district. And we won't know the success of our doing that. That will take some time. We do know that the attendance rates are up at East High School. That's a very good sign. I mean, being in class is an essential aspect of success. We believe we have a superb teaching staff that is committed. We have redesigned how what the role of the teachers are. The teacher's role has been expanded in at East High School, and their teachers are much more involved in the lives of our students, and families are involved in the lives of our students. So we think we have put together a program that that augurs for success. And to Delvin's point, as we create a school that graduates more than 42 or 43% of those who enter, will we also yield a graduating class of students who are better prepared, and to use Delvin's words, who are prepared to take on the challenges of an education at a major research university. But beyond that, there are other things that have been in place actually for some time. Our McNair program, which is run by Associate Dean Beth Olivares, actually has programs in East High School and in Franklin High School that are designed to provide enriched experiences for students with a view towards, one, getting them to graduate, not just to graduate, but to graduate with well-earned high school diplomas, and to prepare them for competitive admission to colleges and universities. We know that of the 43% or so students who graduate from Rochester City School District, only about 5%, according to data that I have seen recently, only 5% are college or job ready. Well, part of what Beth Olivares is doing with the McNair program is trying to improve on that. So those are two programs that East High School is freshly underway as of September. Beth Olivares' program has been underway for quite a while. And then there are a score of or more of other programs that are involved. Student programs, for example, where students are actually in various of our schools. Delvin and some of his colleagues in the Black Students Union, for example, are very serious about lending their shoulders to the wheel. I mean, we're very proud of our students because this is so serious to them. And we realize that Delvin and our student colleagues, Delvin and his student colleagues, are our successors. They're the ones who have to pick up the ball and run with it after Rich Feldman and I are sort of no longer here. So I take great, I'm highly reassured in listening to our students and watching what they're doing in this summit which they had recently. This is a real and a serious issue to them, and that makes Rich and me feel a great sense of confidence.
All right, Delvin, I know you got to run because you are busy with your own classes and studies today.
Right.
So last quick comment from you before we hear from some of your other classmates. And again, I'm not saying this as a cheerleader for anybody. I'm just observing that we have seen other campuses where it has been rougher. Mizzou, there's a number. And at the very least, when we've called you, when we've called the administration, everyone's shown up. Everyone's here talking since November going forward. Do you get the sense going on that this is healthy right now and will get better? I mean, are you an optimist that this is a healing and improving situation?
Yes, and the responsibility of that is both, I feel, on administrations, but heavily on students. This past weekend I was in D.C. and was just with the president, student body president of Mizzou, and me and him had the chance to talk and discuss a lot about what we were facing at the University of Rochester, and able to talk to him about what he was facing at Mizzou. Administration can only, I feel, make this important, but students have to continue to show that it has an importance to them. If we drop the ball and are continuously quiet, if we say we'll find whatever happens, then I think that it will lose the steam that this issue and that these concerns need. So I am pleased with what I'm hearing, but I also know that we have to continue to work together to achieve the goals that we want. To be honest, I don't think that we have to continuously demand. I don't think that we have to continuously go against administration, to be honest. I feel now that we have made our point known. Protest is a tool that we use to make our demands known. Now that they are known, we have to go in the rooms, in the boardrooms, in the office meeting rooms, and come together and say, how are we going to achieve the goals that we have protested and demanded? So it takes an intellectual skill. It takes a will to have those type of discussions that aren't yelling matches, but are serious, grown-up, intellectual dialogue about how do we achieve the end result and the end goal.
Delvin's a member of the University of Rochester's Black Students Union and Douglas Leadership House. Back to work for him, but thanks for taking the time to join the program,
thank
Delvin,
you.
And I know we'll talk again.
Absolutely.
Thank All right, you. Thank you, Delvin. So before I hear from some of his classmates, what do you think of his closing comments?
Well,
there,
I'd Dean very Tyler? Much like to thank Delvin for his comments. I think he's exactly right on every point he made. I believe our goals, we share, everyone has shared goals on this topic. We want our students to succeed. My success as a dean comes from our students' success in the classroom and beyond. And the general demands that they have made or the goals they've set are ones that we want to work toward. And as Delvin said, the way we're going to get there is if we sit down and talk to one another and try to figure out how to do it. That's what we've been doing, and I'm committed to continuing that.
I would say to your listeners, I would hope that there is no doubt amongst any of us about how bright the future is when you listen to Delvin speak. I agree with my colleague Rich that everything that Delvin has said, we are absolutely on the same page. I would also point out, having been around the university for a long time, that some of the most important initiatives on these very hard issues have come from students. So what we hear Delvin's saying and other of our students saying today have been said by their predecessors over a long period of time, of which I have had the privilege of being a part, on problems, some of which are relatively easy to solve. These problems need to be understood in a layered fashion. There are some problems that we can deal with almost by executive order. And then there are other problems that are deeply rooted in the social culture of this country. And they're much harder to address. But address them we continue to do, and it's important for us to pay our respects continually to our students for the leadership that they demonstrate in drawing attention of the university and drawing attention to the community to these important issues.
All right. So to be fair, again, I just want to frame this discussion with some context for our listeners. This subject came up a few weeks ago when Delvin and two of his colleagues and fellow students there, Kirill English and Amber Hudson, came on the program. Most of our conversations, like this one right now, are live on this program. Sometimes we pre-record just based on need of guests. And so they had an event coming up that they created, that Delvin, that Kirill, and that Amber had created, the Joint Collegiate Black Student Summit, the JCBSS. And they came on to tell us about that. And that my expectation was we were going to talk about the event that was coming up, et cetera. And what happened was Delvin and Kirill and Amber kind of pivoted in that discussion and told us about some of their ongoing concerns, some of what you just heard Delvin cover. But they asked us to air those comments in full. What we ended up doing was we ended up editing out that section of the interview, not because we wanted to suppress it in any way, but because we only thought it was fair to air it when we had fellow administrators here who could respond, etc. So now, here's the background. You're about to hear Kirill English and Amber Hudson, the chairwoman of the JCBSS and the director of the JCBSS and University of Rochester students who were with Delvin that day. Their comments are, I think, a little bit more critical. You're about to hear them. You're about to hear some of my discussion with them. It's about a 4-minute segment you're about to hear of that. And to keep in mind, this is a few weeks old now, held for this moment. So maybe not quite as updated, but I do want to, just to be fair to them, play it now, and then we'll let the administrators respond. And then we're going to spend the rest of the hour talking about a new anti-racism campaign on campus. So this is Kirill English and Amber Hudson talking to me just a couple of weeks ago.
We had all these meetings. We had a couple of town hall meetings, and we thought that by us telling the university and administration and the other students on campus how we felt in many different forms, we thought maybe they'll listen finally, and maybe they'll take a stance against racism and against these different forms of oppression that we face on the campus. But it just seems like when we start to take some steps forward, there's always something else to just put us back. And it's kind of, it's very disappointing for me as just a sophomore to see that my university doesn't really support me.
Now, they might come back and say, look, you know, the conversation really elevated, it escalated in November. Mm-hmm. It's been, you know, roughly 3 months, mm-hmm. and that we care and that we're working on these problems, and they're not going to change overnight, but we do care. Good enough for you, not good enough?
I mean, that's something they've been saying for a while. The Yik Yak hasn't been a problem just this year. We've had these problems. We've had conversations with administration. They came to us. They talked. They said, hey, we want to know how you feel. And we've been trying to get updates since last year. And then this year, when everything happened at Missouri, that's when they had a real interest in what's going on. Oh, we want to know what's up with you guys, like a check-in. And we're like, we were trying to do this for how many months prior to, and now you want to figure out what's wrong. So it's just, I don't know.
Okay, yeah. And to be fair, I mean, listeners, again, we've been talking about Yik Yak, but this is not only about Yik Yak and social media. This is about a number of issues. And Kirill used a strong word. You used depression. Now, some of our listeners last time, Delvin and some of his colleagues were in, mm-hmm. some of our listeners hear some of that language, and they push back and they say, absolutely, we should have everyone feel included and safe, but are you overstating, you know, lack of feeling safe? I mean, you've heard that.
Oh, yeah.
We had some callers who felt that way. So I'll start with you, Kirill, because you used the word oppression. Explain what you mean by the word oppression, and what do you say to people who think, well, that's overstating the case?
I mean, have you seen any of the Yik Yak posts?
Well, of course, yeah.
Okay, so, I mean, I feel like it's self-explanatory. I don't really know how it's overstating. I feel like the people who assume it's overstating are downplaying the way we feel, and that's a problem in the community in itself, because we're literally telling you we don't feel safe, and you're still saying, but you don't know how we feel to say that it's an overstatement.
Sure. One of the folks who listened to the program in November said it's terrible, some of the comments that are coming through.
Right.
Ignore it. Yeah. It doesn't exist to you. Just leave it be. That was some of what they said. You're saying you actually feel threatened. Unsafe.
I mean, especially for those of us who live in the Douglas Leadership House. Have you heard of the Douglas Leadership House?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, and because it's a place where Black students live, it's not just Black students. There's Hispanic students. There are white students. But they assume, okay, we can target this house because we know a couple of them live here. So we can say, oh, let's burn a cross in front of their house. Or they can come in our house and pee whenever they feel like it. But
has that happened?
Yes, multiple times. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And everyone has access, so it's not like we could say, we're going to lock up the house or we're going to put cameras around, because we can't. It's an open house. So,
Amber, how do you feel?
I feel a lot of how Kirill and Delvin both feel. It's definitely not safe. Everyone knows the Douglas Leadership House. It's on the frat quad. It's obviously, it says DLH on top of the house. So, like, you know that that's the house. And when people are writing things like, oh, we're going to burn a cross, or we're going to go into the house and trash the house, like, they know where this house is. They know where we live. Like, they can't, there's no way to get away from that. So when we're coming to the university and we're like, we do not feel safe, and we have proof of people saying these things of how they're going to harm the place where we're living, like, why is the university not doing anything? We pay tuition just like the white students on campus pay tuition.
All right, so you heard Kirill English and Amber Hudson, two students there. And let's just let Paul and Brigitte and Dean Richard Feldman respond to some of that. They're saying not really feeling safe in the Douglas House. So what would you say to that, Dean Feldman?
So first of all, I think all of us are appalled at some of those comments on Yik Yak. Mm-hmm. I don't think any of the discussion was about whether those comments are acceptable or not. The issue was what best to do about
right,
that.
Right.
I think to hear that our students feel unsafe on campus is, of course, extremely distressing to me, I'm sure to Paul. I know President Seligman expressed the same feeling. We want to do what we can. I think we have asked public safety to pay greater attention to the house, and we've asked students to report any incidents that occur so that we're in a position to respond. We can talk further, if you'd like, about Yik Yak and that decision and where that now stands.
Well,
but
I
don't know if that's a useful place for us to go right now.
I think what I want to do, because in a moment we'll take a break and we'll talk about the new anti-racism campaign. Yeah. We're going to finish the hour with that. But maybe that is a logical place to wrap up this part of the discussion, Dean Feldman, because that got a lot of attention back in November. The social media app, and frankly, going back to, as I said in the program last year and the year before, you know, students at Brockport, students at colleges and universities across the country. We had professors who have said, I've been threatened by students who are sitting in the same room and I don't know who they are and they're on Yik Yak. I'm not saying that's all of Yik Yak, but it is anonymous. And so the students at the time in November were saying, shut it down on campus servers. Find a way to at least shut it down there, send a message that that's not acceptable. Some of the pushback was, you can only do it on campus servers. People are still going to access it. You're probably not going to stamp out all of the problem there. And so why don't you just explain what the administration feels can or should be done, if anything, regarding Yik Yak and some of what you heard from the students.
So I think a couple of points to make. Number one, Yik Yak announced a couple of weeks ago a change in its policies so that users of Yik Yak need usernames, and by default, although overridable, their username will be posted along with any comment that they make so that it doesn't have the same degree of anonymity that it used to have, although I will acknowledge that on their current system, people still could remain anonymous if they like. But they'll have a greater ability to identify people who might make comments that are beyond what's legally acceptable. I think a great part of our effort has to be not so much to not the legal approach, but rather to work to get offensive posts removed. And I think the campaign, the We're Better Than That campaign against racism, is really the right way to proceed. It's to do everything we can to create a culture in which people don't say things like that. And when somebody does, the campus community is to say, we're better than that. We don't condone racism. We don't accept that kind of talk. So I think that's where we're headed, and I'm very pleased with the status of the movement on this campaign.
Well, let's take a short break and come back, and let's talk about the anti-racism campaign, the We're Better That campaign, because I'm late for a break, and we're going to bring in a student named Justin Delanois, who's on the line with us. So let's get that short break. We'll come back with a student, Paul Burgett, University of Rochester Vice President, and Dean Richard Feldman, and we're going to talk about the We're Better Than That campaign going forward at the University of Rochester next. Coming up in our second hour, what does Donald Trump's success in the primary process tell us about conservative working class voters? And what does it tell us about trade and taxes? Some conservative leaders say the working class doesn't believe trickle-down works. They're fed up with trade deals. So should we be? We're going to talk to a couple of people who are well-positioned to help us understand those issues next hour.
Support for your public radio station comes from our members and from the Doyle Automotive Group, serving the Rochester region for more than 70 years. Doyle Subaru offers symmetrical, all-wheel drive vehicles for all-weather driving, including the 2016 Subaru Legacy, on Ridge Road in Webster and online at doylesubaru.com.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. This is a conversation that kind of updates where the University of Rochester is in working with its students, particularly African-American students on campus, work toward inclusion, safety, and many other issues. And I know Paul wanted to just respond very briefly before we bring in another student. You wanted to respond a little bit to what you heard from the two young women who are on the program.
That's right. I think it's very important taking seriously. We must take seriously the concerns and the worries that the students have, but no one should misunderstand the university's position about safety on our campus. It is, and I'm speaking out of the president's office to say, that safety and security is a first-order priority for all students, including our African-American students, and we will do what we need to do with the resources that we have available to help ensure the safety of the students, faculty, and staff at the university.
Okay. Now, this this new anti-racism campaign called We're Better Than That, and kind of a, as the Democrat and Chronicle said, a newly minted university slogan to combat racism and hate speech. And I want to bring in a student, Justin Delanois, who's on the line with us. Justin, how are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good. Thanks for taking the time. Well, why don't you, from a student perspective, tell us about this campaign and your feelings about it, and then we'll hear from our guests in studio. Why don't you tell us about the We're Better Than That campaign?
Okay, so the We're Better Than That campaign is the university's anti-racism campaign, and the point of our campaign, that how we've designed it, is to educate students. So we don't really believe that we have too many racist students. I mean, anywhere you go, there's going to be people who are racist. But we just have students who are uneducated about certain things, about certain the cultures within the African-American communities and the Latino communities. They don't know the history that we have. They're unaware of the types of slang and the words that we use to communicate. Are just kind of like who we are in essence, and they're unaware. And so rather than trying to sit here and tell people you're racist, trying to educate them. And that's the main goal of the campaign, is to teach people basically how to be decent and good human beings and how to interact effectively with people from a wide spectrum of differences.
So, Justin, what are the things that can be done on campus to affect that kind of change?
One of the things that we're doing right now is we're trying to get the name out there. So we're trying to associate We're Better Than That with the anti-racism and anti-racism movement. And what we're trying to do is we're getting our name out there. So we've been sharing many T-shirts and buttons and stickers with the students so that they're aware. Right now we're very much in the promotional phase, and now we're moving into the educational phase. We're piling together resources on how to combat racism, how to recognize a microaggression, things of that nature, and we're compiling it onto our website so that people have a place to turn to look at what's going on and to also educate themselves internally. We're also coming up with new ideas on how to incorporate a orientation program for the incoming freshmen on how to recognize racism and realize that it's happening and how to combat it. One of the biggest issues that we have is that people see racism and then they don't say anything. They don't want to say anything. And we're trying to motivate students to realize that that's not okay. It doesn't have a place here on our campus. And how we do that is we speak up and we say something. Our most powerful tool is our voice. And when we're silent, you know, terrible things happen.
Paul, what do you think?
I think this is a wonderful initiative. And frankly, this initiative came out of the November protest. Mm-hmm. Tremendous credit has to go to a variety of people, not the least of whom is the dean of the college, Rich Feldman, sitting next to me. Recognizing that there were issues that could be taken on immediately, Rich lost no time in galvanizing forces for which he has responsibility, individuals and offices for which he has responsibility, to begin implementing plans that could address the whole issue of climate. This goes to the issue of climate. And so I'll let Rich talk a little bit. I think Rich should say a little bit about his role in getting We're Better Than That underway. Rich?
Well, thanks, Paul. But I do want to direct the praise where it really belongs. And Beth Olivares and Norm Burnett have chaired the committee that's working on this. But I believe it's 70 or perhaps more now students and staff and faculty have participated, and the credit goes to them, and that includes Justin, who's played, I think, a primary role among the students. So I'm delighted with what they're doing. I think, as Justin characterized it very, very effectively, that this is the promotional campaign. And it's remarkable how much of an impact this has had already. The T-shirts, the buttons, the stickers are very prominent. People are well aware of it. It's mentioned in many places. And I want to add to one thing to what Justin said a couple of minutes ago, which is to give students the tools to respond if they hear or encounter racism. That's entirely right, but this is not just about the students. The staff and the faculty need those tools too. This has to involve everybody in being aware that these issues are real, that our students are affected by them, and that it's the whole community that has to take on the effort to try to change it. And I think we're making progress. I think We're Better Than That campaign is going to come through over the next several weeks with a number of recommendations that might include additional kind of programming, perhaps in the residence halls. Justin mentioned during orientation, there will be discussion about curricular initiatives, perhaps a reading for incoming freshmen that will help focus attention on these issues. So I think there are many ideas coming up from that group. They're working very hard over a relatively short period of time and making real progress. And I'm hopeful that we'll be better.
It's important not to let the idea get lost that this is a program which has legs and is expected to be a permanent part of life at the university, thanks to the work of people that Rich mentioned, Bethel Avaris and Norm Burnett, and the students. And so it's not a one-off program, but rather one that will be woven into various aspects of student life over time.
Justin, stay on the line with us. I want to read a listener comment. An email comes in from a listener named John in Pittsford, who writes, "I'm fortunate enough to work at the university. My office has to be the whitest place I've ever worked. I'm white, and it's noticeable even to me. Can your guests talk about how or if diversity is part of recruiting efforts? How are we doing overall? Can we do better attracting minority candidates, not just for academic faculty posts, where the value of diversity is apparent, but for the hundreds of other functional teams on and off campus that also make things run?"
The answer to that question is, can things be done to make it better? John, absolutely. And if you've been around for a while, you know that our success rate in doing that has been mixed. It requires, I think, and the Commission on Race and Diversity, which Rich and I chair, are now busily taking on the matter of faculty and staff issues. And part of the faculty and staff issues goes to the recruitment and retention of a variety of people, of diverse people, for which we have not done nearly as good a job as we aspire to do and as we need to do. So the Presidential Commission has that on its radar screen, and in the coming weeks and months, this is an issue which has a very high priority. Developing strategies that, for instance, that generate pools that are sufficiently deep and diverse, pools of candidates, applicants that are rich and diverse, is an important first step. But there's a step beyond that, and that is overcoming sometimes the unseen tendencies to exclude people. We don't question the motives of excluding, but it just the vision of those who are perhaps making decisions about hiring, the extent to which there are unspoken and unaware tendencies to exclude people that really we really ought to be giving serious attention to. And we need systems of accountability to ensure that our applicant pool is not only rich and diverse, but those who are in that pool who happen to be different are given the attention, their candidacy is given the kind of attention that everybody deserves to have. We have a lot of work to do there.
Let me ask a question that actually comes from a listener named David on Twitter that I think is an interesting one, and I'll start with Justin, and again on the line with us is student Justin Delanois from the University of Rochester. And I'll start with Justin, and then I'll ask our studio guest David's question, who appreciates, I think, a lot of the conversation about these efforts that we've been talking about, the many efforts all hour long. But David says, "I'm a data guy. What metrics are there? How do you define measurable success for these kinds of efforts?" Justin, for you as a student, I don't know if there is an easy answer to that, because you know you're sort of talking about abstract terms about making the We're Better Than That campaign to reaching out to bridging differences, to helping people understand what racism truly means. But is in your mind, is there a way to kind of figure out if this is working or not? Justin, are you there? I don't hear.
Yes, hello.
Oh, go ahead, Justin.
I think the way I figured out how it was working and how I knew it was working was I live in an all-male hall, and I'm 17, I'm the only person of color on my hall. And the first day we rolled out the campaign, we were giving out T-shirts. I told all the kids in my hall, you know, make sure you guys go get a T-shirt. It's a really good campaign, you know. They all went, and they all got a T-shirt. And later that evening, they sent me a picture of them all wearing the T-shirt. And so when I saw that, kids who, you know, are upper middle class, white American kids, have really have never encountered racism or ever had to experience it, were paying that much attention to something, I knew it was working. When I saw some of my friends from different fraternities and sororities sending me pictures of them wearing the shirt or asking me, what does this mean? How can I help? How can I get involved? I knew that it was working. So we don't really have like a definite way of saying it's working, but my main goal was to target the students who think it doesn't matter, who don't care really about it, or who have never been part of these conversations before. And to see now a large array of students now entering the conversation and wanting to actively help, in my mind, that's the success that I wanted to achieve.
That's a neat story to share, Justin, just because I think what Justin's disposition says to me is that we too easily say, well, X amount of people are racist or this is racist, when what we should recognize is we're really segregated. A lot of students go to school, they haven't encountered diversity. I was that guy. I went to school in suburban Cleveland, upper middle class, didn't see a lot of diversity. Didn't mean I didn't have non-white friends. I did, but you know, you didn't see a lot of it. And so there's a lot to learn in life. And what Justin Dellen was telling us is that he's meeting a lot of fellow students who maybe haven't encountered a lot of diversity, but they are open-armed to understanding, to learning, to supporting these kind of efforts, which is, I think it's a pretty neat story.
I think that's great. If I just to add to that, from my view, in my view, one of the great assets of the college is our great diversity. We have people from around the world, from around the country, every race, every religion. But that's just a first step. We're a success when the students learn to interact with one another, when they meet one another, learn about one another. And I think what Justin was just talking about is a step in that direction. I'm delighted to hear what he just reported.
And Paul, for you, you know, going forward, not just with the We're Better Than That campaign, but with everything we've been talking about with Delvin and these efforts that have been ongoing, what to you are the signs that the university is making the progress that you want?
Well, I think you've heard some of it. I think the Justin's comment, it's absolutely a delightful story and it's wonderful. It also gives me promise that in fact, in our community at the university, there are far more people who are people of goodwill and who are supporters of the goals, to go back to what Delvin was saying, who really are supporters of the goals. Some of these are very hard problems, and I'd like to pick up on what David's tweet to you about the data guy and metrics. And that's a tough one because we don't have quotas. We don't say that, well, we've got to have 15% of this or 25% of that. That's not how we measure success. I think we have to slice it a little differently. We have to be sure, to go back to something I said earlier, that when we are looking, for example, to hire, when we're looking to hire, that we have sent the message has been embedded in the process and in the minds of those responsible, that developing pools of applicants that are diverse and that they can demonstrate that, they can show that, they can be held accountable to demonstrate that they have developed a pool, and that those in the pool who might be different have been given as equal a shake in the process as everybody else has been. I think those are the strategies that I think will drive our attention more so than will trying to define success by absolute numbers. I don't think we're not probably going to go down that road.
All right, Justin, just about a minute left here. So going forward, the We're Better Than That campaign is going to last how long? Is it is it the rest of the school year? Is it what are your expectations for this campaign going forward?
You know, we haven't really discussed that yet. I personally would like to, you know, see this something become permanent here at the University of Rochester until, you know, later, way, way down the line when we can truly declare ourselves racist-free campus. But I think for now,
We've just got started. There's a lot of ideas at the table that are being discussed, and it would be a shame if it were to end soon. My hopes are to continue it and to grow it and to make it, you know, take it beyond the University of Rochester. You know, it started here, but racism isn't something that's specific to our campus. It happens in our cities, in our towns, and, you know, right here in Rochester, in New York State, you know, all over the country. So it'd be nice to see this become a huge thing. But I definitely think that we need to keep it for a little while longer and see what can come of it, because being at the table and hearing the conversations, we've just begun, and there's a lot of more work to do.
Justin Delanois, student at the University of Rochester, good luck to you in the future, and thanks for taking the time to come on the program today, Justin.
Thank you so much.
And Dean Feldman, thanks for taking the time as well to come in and follow up on these issues. Plenty more to talk about going forward. It's good to see you here.
Thank you.
Paul Burgett, of course, great to see you as well, and thanks for taking the time for this program.
Thank you for having us on, Evan.
You got it. And our thanks to Delvin Moody and the other students who joined us as well earlier this hour. We'll take a short break, and we're going to come back and invite our couple of regular guests on this program to help us understand economic issues. If you've been hearing a lot about free trade or protectionism or the death of trickle down, of all kinds of things that have been coming up in the primaries, our guests next hour are going to work through that on Connections.